Chapter 3. With electrical power out in the city, Karina had a hard time finding the squat concrete building in the older section of Baghdad. She had been there once before, in daylight, and not in the middle of a war. The building's windows had been boarded over, giving it the aspect of a fortress. As she strode up to the thick wooden door, she could hear the pop of small arms fire in the distance. She tried the heavy cast-iron handle. The door was unlocked, and she pushed it open and stepped inside. The gauzy glow of oil lamps illuminated the faces of men hunched over backgammon boards and glasses of tea. The atmosphere was like the inside of an exhaust pipe. The thick, choking smoke produced by dozens of cigarettes and water pipes had taken only a slight edge off the sweaty odor of unwashed bodies. The low murmur of male voices halted, as if a switch had been turned off. Although most of the unshaven faces were cloaked in shadow, she knew that she was the target of hostile eyes. Two figures detached themselves from a dark corner like creatures crawling out of a swamp. One man slipped around behind her, shut the door, and cut off any possible escape. The other man confronted her head-on. Speaking in Arabic, he growled, "Who are you?" His breath was foul with stale tobacco and garlic. Resisting the natural impulse to gag, Karina stood to her full 5'5" height. "Tell Ali that Mercadi wants to see him." Female assertiveness had its limits with Arab men. An arm snaked around her neck from behind and squeezed tight. The man standing in front produced a knife and held it so close to her left eye that its sharp point was a blur. She croaked out a feeble call for help. The door opened with a crash. The arm relaxed around her neck. Corporal O'Leary stood in the doorway, the muzzle of his carbine pressed against the base of the door guard's skull. The Marine had heard Karina over a walkie-talkie tuned to the same channel as the one clipped to her vest. A Humvee was parked across the street. The vehicle's top lights were on, and those inside the tea house had a clear view of the long barrel of the M2 machine gun mounted on the vehicle's roof. The gun was aimed at the door. A squad of Marines stood in the street with rifles in attack position. The Marine kept his eyes on the man with the knife. "You okay, ma'am?" "Yes, thank you," she said, rubbing her neck. "I'm fine." "Crash course I took in Arabic didn't teach me how to tell this guy I will splatter his brains around the room if his friend doesn't drop the knife." Karina did a rough but effective translation. The knife clattered to the floor, and the Marine kicked it out of reach. The thugs almost tripped over themselves as they retreated back into the murk that had spawned them. A voice called out in English from behind a curtain at the back of the tea house. "Peace be upon you." Karina responded to the traditional Arabic greeting. "Peace be upon you, Ali." A man emerged from between the dingy sheets of cotton that served as curtains and wove his way around the close-packed tables. The light from the Humvee fell on his pudgy face and fleshy nose. A circular knit cap covered his shaven head. His New York Yankees t-shirt was too short for his ample body, exposing his hairy belly button. "Welcome, Signora Mercadi," he said. He clasped his palms together. "And to your friends, the same." "Your man was about to stick a knife in my eye," Karina responded. "Is that how you welcome guests?" Ali's small, cunning eyes surveyed Karina's body and lingered on her face. "You're wearing a military uniform," he said with an unctuous smile. "Perhaps he thought you were an enemy soldier." Karina ignored Ali's comment. "I want to talk to you." The Iraqi scratched a scraggly black beard that had bits of food caught in it. "Of course. Let us step out back and have some tea." The Marine spoke up. "Do you want me to go with you?" "I'll be all right." Karina surveyed the room. I wouldn't mind some insurance, however. As you can see, Ali's place doesn't attract the finest clientele. The corporal grinned. He poked his head out the door and gave a wave. Four Marines piled into the room and took up positions along the walls. Ali held aside the grubby curtains, opened a metal door, and ushered Karina into a room bright with electric lights. A generator purred in another part of the building. Richly colored rugs covered the floor and walls. A television screen connected to an exterior security camera showed images of the street outside the building. The Humvee was clearly visible. Ali gestured for Karina to take a seat on a platform piled with large velvet cushions. He offered her tea, which she refused. He poured a glass for himself.
What brings you out for a visit in the middle of an invasion?
She met his question with a hard gaze.
I came from the National Museum. It's been looted of thousands of antiquities.
He lowered his glass in mid-sip.
That's outrageous. The National Museum is the heart and soul of Iraq's cultural heritage.
Karina laughed out loud at Ali's feigned shock.
You should have been an actor, Ali. You'd easily win an Academy Award on that line alone.
Ali had learned his acting skills as a professional wrestler. He had even wrestled in the United States under the name of Ali Babas.
How could you think I'd be involved in a heist like that?
He still used some of the American slang he had picked up from his wrestling days.
No antiquity of value moves in and out of Iraq without your connivance or knowledge.
Ali had established a worldwide network of procurers, dealers, and collectors. He had cultivated the Saddam Hussein family and was said to have acquired many objects for the collection of the psychopathic sons Uday and Qusay.
I only deal in legal objects. You can search the place if you want to. You're dishonest, but not stupid, Ali. I'm not demanding the return of the minor artifacts. They're useless for museum purposes without reliable provenance.
She drew a piece of paper from her pocket and handed it to Ali.
I want these objects. There's an amnesty. No questions asked.
He unfolded the paper with his thick fingers. His lips widened in a smile.
I'm surprised you don't have the Brooklyn Bridge on this list. I already own it, Karina said. Well?
He handed the paper back.
Can't help you.
Karina tucked it back in her pocket and rose from the cushion.
Okay. Just okay? You're disappointing me, Signora. I expected you to be your usual pit bull self. I don't have time. I have to go talk to the Americans.
She headed for the door. He called after her.
The Americans will have their hands full trying to get the power and water back on.
Karina kept walking.
They left the museum unguarded. Do you think they care about a petty thief like me?
She put her hand on the doorknob.
I think they'll care a great deal when they learn of your ties to Saddam Hussein. Everyone in Iraq had ties to Saddam, Ali said with a guffaw. I was careful to leave no record of my dealings. That doesn't matter. The Americans have had itchy trigger fingers since 9/11. I'd suggest that you vacate this building before they target it with one of their smart bombs.
Ali vaulted from his cushion and lumbered over. The sneer had been replaced by an expression of alarm. He reached out for the paper.
I'll see what I can do.
Karina pulled the list out of reach.
I've raised the ante. Make your calls now. Don't tell me that the phones are out. I know you have your own ways to communicate. I'll wait while you call your people. Ali frowned and snatched the list from her hand. He went over and reached under his cushion and pulled out a portable radio. He made several calls, using innocuous language that didn't betray their purpose. After the last call, he clicked off the radio and set it down on the tea table.
You will have what you want within 48 hours.
Make it 24 hours, Karina said. I can find my way out. She opened the door and flung a final taunt over her shoulder.
You should stock up on your supply of flashlight batteries.
What do you mean?
While the idiots you hired were floundering around in the dark getting their fingers burned, they missed 30 cabinets with the museum's best cylinder seals and tens of thousands of gold and silver coins.
Ciao. She gave a light laugh and disappeared through the curtains.
As Ali slammed the door behind her, a rug hanging on the wall pushed aside and a man stepped through a doorway into the room. He was tall and powerfully built. His cherubic face seemed out of place with his cruel physique, as if his close-shaven head had been attached to the wrong body. Although there was plenty of room for his features on the broad face, eyes, nose, and mouth were squeezed close together, creating an effect that was childlike and grotesque at the same time.
A formidable woman, said the man.
Ali spat his words out.
Karina Makadi. She is nothing but a UNESCO busybody who thinks she can push me around.
The stranger glanced up at the television monitor and he smiled mischievously as he watched the Humvee drive off with Karina and the Marines.
From what I heard, she did exactly that.
I survived Saddam and I can survive the Americans, Ali said with a fierce grin.
The man shifted his gaze back to the Arab.
I trust your difficulties won't endanger the matter we were discussing before she interrupted our negotiations.
Not exactly.
What do you mean?
There's been a glitch.
The man moved closer until he loomed over the Iraqi.
What sort of glitch?
The Navigator has been sold to another buyer.
We ordered its removal from the museum and paid you in advance. I came to Baghdad to close the deal.
A buyer has come forth with a higher bid. I'll return your deposit. Perhaps I can persuade the buyer to part with the object, although the price is likely to be greater than the one we discussed.
The man's gaze seemed to drill through Ali's skull, but he maintained his smile.
You wouldn't be holding me up for more money.
If you don't want to make a deal. Tough.
Ali was still fuming over his confrontation with Karina. His anger had dulled his street smarts. Otherwise, he might have sensed the menace in the quiet tone when the man whispered,
I must have the statue.
For the first time, Ali noticed the disproportionately large hands that dangled from long, powerful-looking arms.
I was just giving you a hard time, Ali said with a toothy smile. Blame it on that Italian bitch. I'll call the warehouse on my hand radio and have the statue sent over.
He started toward the sitting area.
Wait, the man said.
Ali froze in mid-step. The man's grin grew even wider as he picked up the pocket radio Ali had left on the table.
Is this what you're looking for?
Ali lunged toward the seating platform and slipped his hand under a cushion. His fingers closed on the grip of his Beretta and slipped the pistol out from its hiding place. The man moved with the swiftness of a hunting cheetah. He tossed the radio aside, grabbed Ali under the chin from behind, and twisted his arm. The pistol dropped from Ali's hand. His body was bent backward like a horseshoe on an anvil.
Tell me where to find the Navigator, and I'll let you go. If you don't, I'll snap your spine. Ali was a tough man, but not a particularly courageous one. He needed only a few seconds of exquisite pain to convince him that no piece of art was worth his life.
"Okay, okay, I'll tell you," he gasped.
He spit out a location. The man stopped twisting his arm. The pain eased up. Ali's hand drifted down to the dagger in his ankle sheath. As soon as he got free, he'd carve this creep like a pig. He never got the chance. The man's free hand joined the other under his chin, and the fingers began to squeeze. The knee came up at the same time and dug into the small of his back.
"What are you doing? I thought we had a deal,"
Ali said, barely able to get the words out. He was almost unconscious when he felt a dull snap. The grip on his chin loosened. Ali's head lolled on his chest like a rag doll's, and he slumped to the floor. The man stepped over the still twitching body and pushed aside the hanging rug which hid a back door to the building. Moments later, he disappeared in the maze of alleyways. It took him almost to dawn to make his way back to his hotel. He stood in the window, watching the smoke rise over the wounded city, and made a call on his satellite phone. His benefactor's mellifluous voice came on the phone immediately.
"I've been waiting for your call, Adriano," he said.
"Sorry for the delay, sir. There were unexpected difficulties."
Adriano described every detail of his encounter with Ali. His benefactor would know if he were lying or shading the truth.
"I'm very disappointed, Adriano."
"I know, sir. I was under orders not to let the navigator fall into anyone else's hands. This seemed to be the only way."
"You were absolutely right to follow orders.
It is important that we find the object first.
We have waited nearly 3,000 years. A little more time won't matter."
Adriano breathed a sigh of relief. He had been trained not to feel pain or fear, but he was well aware of the fate of those who displeased his benefactor.
"Do you want me to try to track it down?"
"No. I'll try to go through international channels once more. It's becoming too dangerous there for you."
"I've made arrangements to leave the country through Syria."
"Good."
There was a pause at the other end of the line.
"This woman, Karina Makadi, may prove useful."
"In what way, sir?"
"We shall see, Adriano. We shall see."
The line went dead. He grabbed his bag and closed the hotel room door behind him. He planned to meet an oil smuggler who had promised to get him out of Iraq. In accordance with his standing orders to leave no trace of his passing, he would, of course, dispatch the man to Allah once he was safe across the border. He smiled as he savored the prospect.